Welcome, gentle listeners, to the Daily Nightly, a Jane Austen journey, where we'll be reading the collective works of Austen and exploring her influence in pop culture. We are your humble servants. I am Annie A.K.
And I am Jessie.
And today we are talking about chapters 26 through 30 of Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility. We are halfway done, for real this time.
Yeah, oh, is it real? It's like a little more than halfway done, right?
I have no idea. So how do you feel about our journey so far?
Well, I think last time we discussed, we had really kind of hit, I guess, like the climax of the book, like really with all Lucy's revelations and Eleanor kind of being all up in her feelings. This was kind of, I guess, the point of the book. And now we're dealing with the consequences of some of the earlier goings on. So while the last few chapters were about Eleanor's heartbreak and Eleanor's journey, now we're really seeing kind of what Willoughby was all about and seeing Marianne's side of things.
For sure. It's kind of interesting to think that all of this has been a lot of world building and a lot of like setting up the pieces. And now we're just sort of watching everything kind of fall. The dominoes have been knocked over.
Yeah. Like these are really not the mirror image, but Marianne's story and Eleanor's story really together, and we're dealing with it. So it's a lot of feelings, a lot of heartbreak. I feel kind of bad for our Dashwood sisters, the only good ones in all of the story, right?
Although, people we actually like. Things are pretty dire looking.
Mrs. Jennings is kind of growing on me, but we'll talk about that.
She has her moments. But before we get into that, why don't you tell me what you are also into right now?
Yeah, so basically all I have been able to think about the past week or so, because it just came out and I read it in a day, is Rainbow Rowell's Wayward Son, the sequel to Carry On. I can't remember if I talked about Carry On specifically in the podcast, but I definitely talked about Fangirl, which was the story of, you know, a young girl starting college, and she's really into this fan fiction about Simon Snow, which is a Harry Potter parallel. And so Rainbow wrote Carry On, which is Simon's story, and Wayward Son is the sequel to that. And so while Carry On established this world of magic in Watford and the chosen one Simon Snow, as well as his friend Penny and his vampire roommate Baz, Wayward Son is the sequel, and so our favorite trio kind of embarks on this road trip through America, and we learn the difference between magic in England and magic in America. We meet new friends, we deal with love and life and magic, and it was just really great, and I read it an entire day. Like, I literally got it and sat and spent an entire Sunday reading it, but it was so worth it, and I've reread parts of it a billion times, and you know, I don't really know if Jane would ever imagine such a place with all this magic and this sort of universe, but I think she would really be all for all the romantic angst between the characters, the very like will they, won't they pull and internal dialogue of the characters, Baz and Simon, as they sort of navigate their relationship through lots of other magical shenanigans in America. So it was really great. I know when I describe it, sometimes people might think it's a little silly or really derivative of other Chosen One stories and Harry Potter, and it really is, but at the same time, Rainbow...
But it's, like, literally derivative.
Yeah, it's derivative. It's meant to be that way, and it's subversive in that, so it really takes, like, the Chosen One trope and says, okay, but what happens after? You know, like, we're in Harry Potter, there's, like, this epilogue where it ends with, like, all is well. Spoilers for Harry Potter, I guess. And Wayward Son, at least, is very much the, okay, like, what happens after the Chosen One defeats the bad guy? So if I'm going to map that on Sense and Sensibility, I guess, like, Willoughby is the bad guy, and so now we're going to see what happens after. But anyway,
wow,
read it.
That is a lot.
Yeah, read Rainbow Rowell.
I've had both of them for a while, or I've had Carry On for a while, and just haven't gotten around to it, unfortunately. But because Wayward Son is out and everyone's so excited about it, including you, it's next. Those two are next on my list. I do want to plug a friend of mine who does customized Funko Pops, and she's a big fan of Rainbow Rowell. I think she actually gave Rainbow two of hers, and Rainbow even posted a picture of it, which is really cool. So I'm gonna post a link in the show notes to her Instagram or her Etsy, because she does really adorable work. Also a lawyer.
Oh, that's super cool.
All right, well, that sounds like fun. That sounded really condescending. Sorry.
No, I know that you're very jealous, so I'm letting it slide.
I am a little bit, because I'm feeling a lot of FOMO for not being a part of this world already.
But anyway, so that's me going on and on about Wayward Son, which I've done forever. So Annie, tell us what you are consuming media-wise this week.
So I finished How to Build a Girl, which was a lot of fun. It was a reread for me, and I don't reread a lot of books just for time and concentration sake. So it was really cool to kind of get into it and not be like as distracted by all the humor, which was still hilarious, but I got to, you know, dive in more into the books and the story and this girl who's just trying to grow up and navigate and be more of her own person. And I did start How to Be Famous, which I know you already read and finished as well. It was sort of taken over by the Rainbow Rowell thing. And that's been kind of, that's kind of great to see someone whose writing I'd been a fan of, whose nonfiction essay and journalistic writing I've been a fan of for a while, and see her grow as a fiction writer. So really looking forward to finishing that and seeing where everything goes. I had the privilege of seeing her speak twice in near where I live, and she's a delight. Not much other reading has been going on, but I watched season 5 of Peaky Blinders, which is so much fun. It's a different time period of England than Jane Austen. It's very working class. It's very people just trying to get by, a lot more immigrants, and it's just the exact opposite of everything you'll find in Jane Austen. But it's been really fun seeing people navigate like the social structures and the politics and the women who are like not down with being pushed around and shoved into certain societal expectations, although sometimes a little bit they do. More relevantly to Jane Austen, I've been back on my Buffy the Vampire Slayer rewatch. Now that buffering is back away from the break, and we have been, I know you have too, been watching My So-Called Life along with the Boiler Room podcast, and it's just fun watching these like young teen girls dealing with like these very real things in life and reacting, and occasionally Angela Chase and Marianne get kind of mixed up in my head. So
oh, that's such a good point.
There's one part, and I'll point it out later, where it just reminded me of, I think, in episode 1 or 2 of My So-Called Life, where, you know, someone says something and she just screams in the hallway and walks away. And I thought it was so Marianne.
Oh, that's so true. That is so Marianne. Oh, I didn't even think about that, but it's perfect.
She is such just a teenage girl, our Marianne Dashwood.
That's true. Yeah, so Sense and Sensibility, right, is what we're here to talk about. Chapters 26 through 30. So before Annie goes into our very lovely summary of all the feelings, I'll give a little brief previously on The Daily Nightly, as well as in Sense and Sensibility. We were introduced to the bizarro Dashwoods, the Steele sisters. Anne is fine, but Lucy causes quite the stir when she reveals to Eleanor and us that she's been secretly engaged to Edward Ferrars, Eleanor's beau, for 4 years. Eleanor is understandably devastated by this news, even though she rationalizes it, because Edward couldn't possibly still be in love with Lucy, who is, you know, not very accomplished. She can't even read. Eleanor decides to keep this information a secret from her sister and mother, and whoops, her other sister too, I guess, but suffers in silence as she and her sister are forced to accompany Mrs. Jennings to London, where Marianne is very excited to be reunited with her true love, Willoughby. Yikes.
That, yeah. Definitely a place to be able to leave off on. For this week, we read chapters 26 through 30, and boy, is it a ride. Eleanor and Marianne spent 3 days in a carriage with Mrs. Jennings heading to town. Eleanor's generally not sure how in the heck they all got there, but Marianne and Miss Dashwood thought it was a great idea. So, Marianne seems pretty darn happy throughout the whole thing, because she's got a plan. Something is gonna go down. Meanwhile, Eleanor is spending the whole time, plans to spend the whole time wondering, what is up with this Willoughby guy? What are his intentions? What is his plan? Once again to town, Marianne, very secretive, lots of stuff going down, constantly expecting Willoughby to appear and visit, and every day that he doesn't appear is a huge disappointment. One point, she is so excited and so certain he shows up, she even like shouts that he's here, and it's Colonel Brandon, who definitely appreciates the way Marianne just leaves the room the second he appears. So while they're in town, the Dashwoods enjoy a little social life with Mrs. Jennings. They also go shopping with Mrs. Palmer at some point. Unfortunately, all this fun means that Marianne misses Willoughby when he finally does come and leaves his calling card. At some point, Sir John and Lady Middleton also visit. They host a ball for the young people because that's just what Sir John does. Pretty sure Lady Middleton isn't all that into it herself. Marianne and Eleanor show up, but unfortunately, Willoughby isn't there, and it's very sad. Mostly just for Marianne. Everyone else is probably super relieved. Colonel Brandon appears a few times, and every time he just possibly falls a little bit more in love with Marianne and also has his heart broken even more with every time that he doesn't actually get to talk to her. Eleanor just kind of witnesses all of it, and it's all very sad. Everyone is very sad and depressed in these chapters. It's a lot. Colonel Brandon is also pretty sure that he's heard that Marianne and Willoughby are officially engaged. He tries to offer his congratulations. Eleanor really has no idea what's going on. She's still trying to figure it out. When Eleanor and Marianne do attend a party in town with Lady Middleton, who do they run into? It is Willoughby himself, who is not responding in a way that Marianne would really like. In fact, he's talking to another woman, which is very depressing for Marianne, who immediately decides to leave. And not long after, they get a letter from Willoughby to Marianne, returning all her letters and basically saying, sorry if I led you on. And then it's like a few days of just a lot of crying and throwing oneself against the bed and people finding out that Willoughby is in fact engaged to someone else. Yeah, for as much as there was in these chapters, it's kind of hard to summarize it because it's basically like they went to town. Willoughby was there. He's engaged to someone else. Why didn't I just say that?
No, yeah, I mean, I do think it is a little important to go through the motions because when Willoughby leaves, Marianne is so upset, right? And she like goes through all this performative grief and everyone feels for her. But then here she's so excited to see Willoughby again. So you're kind of like, well, are you lying to yourself? Like, when were you lying to yourself, Marianne? Like, did Willoughby call it off? Like, we don't really know as the reader. So every time she thinks that Willoughby's going to come, you kind of are in her mindset too. You think, oh, like, we're waiting for Willoughby. Even though as each time happens, you're like, okay, like, he's not coming. Like, what happened? But then he does leave his calling card. So we're teased also along with Marianne. So the kind of push and pull here, like when are we going to see Willoughby? It is kind of prolonged and it makes summarizing it hard, but you do get that you're just along with Marianne here as well as Eleanor observing it because Eleanor doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah. Eleanor's trying to figure it out. And I think very interestingly to me, when Willoughby first left them back in Barton, it seemed like the word performative, the way she kind of lost her mind and was grieving over everything in that first week after he was gone. There's something that feels much more real and grounded about this one, even though it is really frustrating where it's like, is he here today? Did he leave a card? Did we miss him while we were gone? And I don't know if it's because that anticipation that gets drawn out that we get follow along with, but when she really, you know, has her heart broken this time, I feel the despair a lot more for her. I don't know. It's very well done, I think, in a very subtle kind of way. I can see how easy it would be to not sympathize for Marianne because she does seemingly put herself in this position and build up these expectations. But I think along with everyone around her, you just feel really sorry for her.
Yeah, I think you're right. When she first goes through the motions of grief, we're not really sorry for her. We're kind of rolling our eyes along with Eleanor. But now, you know, he's so mean to her and he's so cruel. And through Eleanor's eyes, Eleanor thinks that they are engaged because she literally tattletales to her mom, like, mom, like, mother, you can't let Marianne go on this way. What's going on? Or, you know, she's like, are they engaged? So when it happens this time and so publicly and we actually see the letters and Eleanor's not keep or Marianne's not keeping everything so secret and just being letting her emotions guide us, it really makes it all the more real. It's like, okay, we didn't really know what the deal was with Willoughby. We did suspect that he might not be the greatest guy because he was so effusive and the language describing him was so over the top. What he does here is so public and so horrible that now we really do feel for Marianne in a way that we didn't quite earlier.
At some point when Eleanor is talking to her mother or writing a letter to her mother, she says there is like no way that they weren't actually engaged, because Marianne is just so into this to the point where it's hard to imagine that there was never any promise. And the word is spread. This is where I can't totally be on team Miss Jennings, because she literally admits that she's told like everybody.
Yeah,
that
no, that's true.
And even like Colonel Brandon like sneaks on by being like, so it's official. Do I congratulate you on your new brother? And she, it's just set up for so many people to get hurt publicly. Not that Marianne really minds, although I think later on afterwards she tells Eleanor that the last thing she really wants to deal with is other people's pity, but she is not afraid of her feelings or sharing them in the least.
Which I get. I mean, you know, Miss Jennings is her solution to Marianne being so sad is to just throw parties and be around other people, which, you know, is sometimes the last thing that you want to do when you're so upset.
Yeah, it happened like 2-3 hours ago.
Everybody, she keeps like giving her food.
Yeah, she's like, do you want some wine? Do you want some food? I invited some people over for dinner right now.
Come play cards. We know you don't like playing cards, but like come play cards with us.
It's like, it just feels like so, yeah, I think she says something about how it just seems a shame to leave her alone. And it's like, no, she left the room to be alone. That was actually her choice. Mrs. Jennings is, as we can see, an extrovert, and extroverts do not understand people who need time on their own.
That is super real. I feel that. I mean, her intentions are good, at least, but
they are just not always the right choices. Follow that.
That's true. I mean, I do want to talk about Willoughby a little bit before we kind of get into, you know, just how kind of awful he is in the progression there, because we haven't seen him in a very long time. Like, he's been off the page for a long time. And even in the last few chapters where it's just Eleanor's internal drama, and in the chapters before when Edward comes in to visit, he's not even mentioned that much since he's left, but he's always kind of there in the back of our minds. I don't know. He's like a very interesting character that we get such complicated readings of, which in retrospect, maybe we should have always sort of known that he was a bad dude.
Yeah. I mean, the last time we saw him was when he was like, and I imagine him this grandiose way of saying goodbye with his hand waving there and being like, goodbye, everyone. I hope you never change. May you stay so humble and quaint as always. but I imagine it's not unlike what Marianne is going through, where she just always has Willoughby as this presence that's occupying space, even when he doesn't acknowledge her, even though he's not nearby, even though he basically promised he wouldn't be back for at least a year. It's this weird manipulation where he manages to like possess her, but without taking any of the responsibility that comes with that ownership.
No, I think we finally, you know, I think we've discussed previously sort of what is there a villain here, and I think at least for me, I was very much against it. I was like, there's no villains, everyone's just kind of good and bad. Yeah. Some people are distant, and but no, I think Willoughby is the villain here. He what he does is he's a bad guy, and what he does is bad stuff, and he says it in a mean way, and I very much don't like him.
No, there's like no, I mean, he's got charm and he had some fun, but if you know that you're going to be going for something else, don't tag this poor girl along. Don't potentially ruin her reputation, because that's all she has going for her in her future. Don't play with her heart. She's our sweet little Marianne, who's kind of dumb sometimes when it comes to love, but also who just loves so fully. It's asking for trouble. I'm not a fan.
Do you think that Willoughby was always planning on doing something like this? Because the way I read it, and it definitely could be wrong, but the way I sort of interpreted it is that Willoughby at the time did have feelings for Marianne, or at least was charmed by how pretty she was, how smart she was, how well they got along. But like, money was clearly an issue with him. I think it's established that he's a tricky dude and that he wasn't going to get the money that he wanted or needed, and he squandered it, and now he's sort of an opportunist, and he's going to take this other woman because she has all this money. Like, was this all a plan? Did he know he was going to do it? Or, like, is that what you think? Or was this just sort of an opportunity that presented itself?
I don't know how long this engagement has been going on for. That's not something that's been addressed in the book yet. But like you, I do think that there was something real there, some real connection that he was into. But at some point, I see him having... It's hard to imagine that after all that time when he was spending with Marianne, that he didn't make a conscious choice of keeping her on as like an emotional safety net. As opposed, you know, in case the other stuff didn't work out.
Yeah.
At some point, you have to make a choice. And he left it so long before being like, I don't believe was clear enough at the end when he said, this isn't going to happen. He's just like, well, this was nice. See ya. You know, he doesn't actually acknowledge that this thing was happening. It sounds like he never concretely acknowledged this thing was happening with Eleanor. He definitely didn't do it with anyone else to say that, yes, there's this arrangement we've got going on here. It was just trailing her along while still giving himself this wiggle room for deniability that he actually was in it. And later on in that awful letter that he wrote to her, when he was just like, well... I'm sorry if I led you on, if I gave you the wrong impression, I shan't forgive myself. Here's the lock of hair that you were so nice to give me. And just painting it like she was the one sort of, you know, being very revisionist. He's just revising history and being like, yeah, this was like a nice thing and you were very cute. There. I've got things to do.
Oh, that letter was so cruel. I mean, it was cruel brushing her off at the party, but the letter just was so horrible. I've been so fortunate as to give rise to a belief of more than I felt or meant to express. I shall reproach myself for not having been more guarded in my professions of that esteem. Ah, like, twist the knife, will you? I loved so much. I'm so good at expressing myself that I went a little too far and led you on. It's just so absolutely cruel and insensitive.
Yeah, it really is. And Eleanor does use the word cruel. And I think she's also the one who even says, at least internally, he could at least acknowledge that this happened and that there was this arrangement, unspoken or unofficial arrangement, and now it's over. Own your shit, Willoughby.
He wants to have it both ways, I think. There is, like, a weird sense. Like, I wish I could remember, like, do you remember the language that he uses? Like, how cold he is to Marianne? Like, when they finally confront each other at the party?
He, if I'm not mistaken, he actually greets Eleanor first and talks to her. And he doesn't really say very much to Marianne before he's like, bye.
Yeah. He made no reply, but his complexion changed and all his embarrassment returned. But as if on catching the eye of the young woman with whom he had been previously talking, he felt the necessity of instant exertion. He recovered himself again, and after saying, yes, I had the pleasure of receiving the information of your arrival in town, which you were so good as to send me, turned hastily away with a slight bow and joined his friend.
Ugh. So cold.
It's so horrible.
I did enjoy how Marianne's reaction was, go to him, Eleanor, and force him to come to me.
Yeah. That's some good sister work, right?
It is. It's like... Big sister, please fix this because I'm really upset. But at the same time, it was really funny. I thought it was cute as opposed to really bratty, which occasionally Marianne can be. Because, I mean, what do you do?
No, I think it's like a public situation. Like, everybody's been at the party and seen the boy they like be with another girl. And you're like, oh, or another boy. And you're like, oh, thank. Like, that hurts, like, really badly. And I'm at a party and I can't, like, cry or do anything about it.
Plus, you don't know how many of those people at that party have heard the hot goss, that these two are secretly engaged.
Oh, gosh, everyone secretly. Thinks they're engaged and he's all over this other woman. Oh, that just makes it so much worse.
Oh, God. I do like that at that party. The Dashwood sisters also showed up and was at Lady Middleton. She's like, I'm going to go gamble. And everyone and the other two are like, I'm going to grab a chair and not walk around.
Yeah. I find it interesting here how Eleanor views sort of his situation. She says, nothing but a thorough change of sentiment could account for it. Her indignation would have been still stronger than it was had she not witnessed that embarrassment which seemed to speak a conscience consciousness of his own misconduct and prevented her from believing him so unprincipled as to have been sporting with the affections of her sister from the first without any design that would bear investigation. Absence might have weakened his regard, and convenience might have determined him to overcome it, but that such a regard had formally existed, she could not bring herself to doubt. So even Eleanor, is thinking to herself, they had to have loved each other, or liked each other at least. He had to have found something in Marianne that he liked and liked being with her, because Eleanor can't comprehend a universe where he's so unprincipled, he's such a villain, that he had no regard for her at all.
And, well, I mean, it's hard when someone that you cared about so much and invested in so much and really believed that things would work out, and then it turns out that they are crap and your judgment is terrible and you maybe can't trust whether yourself when it comes to judging other people, especially when you're 17 and you're so sure that everything that you believe is correct, and suddenly your world is upended. And let's see. And he wrote, you know, he writes in a letter being like, well, it's nice you'd give me this lock of hair. I'm giving it back to you. And Eleanor or Marianne even says to her, what was it? This lock of hair, which now he can so readily give up, was begged of me with the most earnest supplication. So it's not like Marianne was there, you know, imagining all of this and just seeing that chemistry between them and thinking, yeah, he's totally into me. I could tell because he, like, brushed his arm against me. No, there was something happening here. He was playing into it, whether or not he really felt love or was just, like, enjoying the attention and their banter and their interaction, everything, and having someone adore him. He was leaving that trail for her to be like, yeah, this is leading somewhere. I'm so mad at Willoughby.
No, he is a bad dude, and I don't like him. And he makes... I wonder, is it worse that he actually did like her and betrayed her, or that he was playing her the whole time? Like, I think it almost makes it more of just a scumbag, the fact that he liked her, but then so easily flipped on her when he found someone with more money.
I mean, they both suck.
Yeah, they're both bad, I guess.
I mean, on the one hand, it's just using someone as, and objectifying someone as less than human, if you just, you know, if they're just a plaything for a short period of time and to keep yourself busy until you find what you really are after, versus I really care about you. I think you really care about me. I see that there's something here, but now I'm going to lie and act like it wasn't real. I'm going to make you feel terrible and let you live with consequences, and then let all the people around you kind of like deal with the fallout. Either way, he's trash.
Yeah. I realized that we started with Sense and Sensibility, and I think that was a good idea. I mean, obviously it was published first.
Also, that good idea was also your good idea.
Yeah, thank you. I'll take credit for it. But the difficulty it leaves us a little bit is we aren't as able to compare and contrast certain characters and certain themes yet with other Jane Austen books. But if you'll forgive me for a second for spoiling part of Pride and Prejudice, which I think is maybe our best or more of the more widely known stories. Or I couldn't help but think of Wickham when I was reading about Willoughby. And I think generally, based on my other knowledge of Austen, this is sort of a concept or a character that she's used previously. This is sort of the typical Jane Austen villain. These very suave, attractive, relatively smart men who are very charming and who are very tricky and who are very manipulative. And it's an interesting thing to think about, because we've met kind of manipulative women in Lucy, and we've met sort of stupid men in other characters. And this is our first real villain here, and the one that we can pinpoint. It's one that Jane Austen has used in her other works. And it's kind of interesting to compare and contrast that. You know, here are these opportunistic men, and they're going after money, and that's sort of all they care about, but they're willing to charm the pants off, the skirts off, maybe, the women in their lives, even if there is a form of attraction and a relationship that could be there.
It is interesting, because it's not like in Austen's books, being ambitious and being happy that you are financially able to survive is a bad thing. You know, so many of her, you know, heroines, when they get their happy endings, not only do they find love, they also often get financial stability. Great. But it's not the forefront of what they want. And it's like she's warning people about that sort of charming ambition, the one where that's all that matters, regardless of whether you hurt people along the way while you get there or not. It does make me wonder what kind of men she had encountered in her own personal life that these like charming, rakish bad boys that so many of us have probably encountered in our lives have come across her, and that she has like maybe fallen for or maybe seen other women in her time fall for and be burned by. It's definitely, especially in that time when reputation is so important, it's definitely something to consider. Like, what is she trying to tell other women of her time period?
Yeah, kind of be careful about the men that just want you for money, and how it is possible to find a perfect match, that someone you fall in love with who also has tons and tons of money.
You can make an argument that love and money are two things that go really well together for her. Like, you know, one has to have the other in Jane Austen's world. But like, you see the Palmers and you see Lady Middleton. These are people who are well married, who have money. These women are in an ideal situation, but they clearly don't really love their husband. So it's not like she's idealizing, you know, once you get married for money, everything's going to be okay.
I also think we are, especially with Willoughby, we're getting an exact mirror image sort of thing. Or we're getting him very closely juxtaposed with Colonel Brandon. You know, even she's very explicit about it. Jane Austen is. Like, literally, Marianne runs to the door and says, "Oh my God, it's Willoughby, he's coming." And it's literally Colonel Brandon. And I mean, this has happened before. I think Marianne thinks she sees Edward coming, or she thinks she sees Willoughby coming, but it's Edward. But here we really get, you know, Marianne's waiting for Willoughby to come. Why isn't Willoughby coming to the parties? But you know who is coming around? Colonel Brandon's coming around. Colonel Brandon's coming to the party. Colonel Brandon's the one trying to get information, trying to comfort her. So we really, like, quite literally get Colonel Brandon as a flip side of Willoughby. Here's a nice man who has money and who cares about Marianne.
I really love that. Thank you for pointing that out. Because the one who's showing up is Colonel Brandon. And that one time, Edward. The one who you have expectations for, the one that you want to rely on, and the one who's going to disappoint you is going to be Willoughby. He's the one who doesn't show up. He just kind of appears, and then he's gone. And when you do see him, he's not what you expect. Very well
done. Yeah, we've had conversations about Colonel Brandon before, and I think neither of us were as generous as maybe we're supposed to be about him. He seems like a nice guy, who has money and people like him. But he did seem, you know, the pining after Marianne was getting a little annoying, a little trying. You know, I don't like those sort of stories where, and it's usually like the boy is obsessed with, you know, the woman and follows her and gets a little too creepy, but we're supposed to read it as maybe, like, not to borrow your My So-Called Life reference, but the Brian Krakow to the Jordan Catalano. You know, so there's
exactly
always, you know,
what I was thinking of.
Yeah, so, and we've talked about the perils of that, right? The friend zone, being entitled to a woman's affection just because you're a nice guy. But here, yeah. My feelings for Brandon have kind of taken a little bit of a turn for the better. He just wants her to be happy.
He does. He proves to be like a really true friend to her, very much in the same way that Eleanor is. You know, when he comes around and he says, you know, he genuinely believes that Marianne and Willoughby are officially engaged. You know, he comes by, he says his congratulations, he wishes her well and all that stuff. You know, nothing on his face or in his words reads that, you know, he's resentful or that he's angry or that he feels like he lost in some way. I mean, he probably feels like he lost, but not in like a competitive way, which is refreshing.
His last quote is literally, "To your sister, I wish all imaginable happiness. To Willoughby, that he might endeavor to deserve her."
Brandon...
I know, my heart.
And then at the end, again, Mrs. Jennings, well-intentioned, super not able to read a room. She spent that whole time, you know, watching that conversation with Colonel Brandon and Eleanor when he found out that, what happened and with Willoughby and Miss Gray. She was just waiting for the light to, like, appear in his eyes and him to be so joyous and happy. But instead, he just became really serious and sad. And you realize that, no, he's just, his heart is breaking for Marianne because now she's disappointed and sad and her heart is broken, and it has nothing to do with his feelings. It's just him feeling bad for his friend, this person that he loves dearly, and how she isn't happy anymore.
No, that's a really important distinction. Yeah,
it is. That's if that first part hadn't, like, gotten me with Brandon and his, you know, well wishes and everything, that's the part that really seals it for me, going, like, you know what, dude, you are a good person. You may not always be the funniest or the most charming or the most well-read, but you've got that good heart. For someone who has more money on his own than Willoughby does or is going to earn, that lack of entitlement, it's pretty sexy.
See, Andy, you can have the heart and the money at the same time.
Absolutely. Rich people are people too.
And then Mrs. Jennings is the worst because, like, Marianne's, like, crying off in the corner and Eleanor and her sitting. She's like, well, now Marianne can marry Colonel Brandon. He makes all this money. And there is that issue of the love child, but, like, whatever. We can overlook that. I was like, Mrs. Jennings.
I love that part. She's like, oh. Yeah, I forgot about that kid. But yeah, there's a love child. That's okay. You could sell her off as, like, paid labor.
Yeah. She's the worst, but also kind of the best. I enjoyed that. What can I say?
I mean, she is the worst. But she also kind of lives in the real world where you're, like, you're just trying to survive and trying to make do and not appear like a total social miscreant, I guess.
I mean, she is, like, the matchmaker of the book. So we have to give her some sort of credit.
She is. She really is. Although I'm amazed that she's not trying to do as much matchmaking for Marianne, or I mean for Eleanor. But Eleanor is too busy trying to act like everything is fine.
Yeah. So let's talk about Eleanor, because I think these chapters really are focused on Marianne and Marianne's problems, which is what, you know, it's fine. We literally just read a bunch of chapters where Eleanor was dealing with her own stuff. But there are some indications that Eleanor is thinking a little bit about herself when in chapter 28, when Marianne is at the party and Willoughby turns away from her all cold, Eleanor thinks to herself, her own situation gained in the comparison, for while she could esteem Edward as much as ever, however they might be divided in future, her mind might be always supported. So she has this little moment of, well, the man I like also jilted me, but at least he's a nice guy.
Yeah. That's a little comfort, but I guess it's something. For the most part, though, she really doesn't... She manages not to bring up Edward at all, except later on when Marianne is almost feeling bad for Eleanor and how she has to deal with this crying, weeping, unhappy sister. And she refers to her as Happy Eleanor.
Oh, yeah. No, I literally am looking at that quote right now. Do you call me happy, Marianne? Ah, if you only knew. That is such, like, I just, that whole thing here, you know, I can't, like, the sister bonding here, but, like, that are... They're keeping secrets from one another, and it's awkward, but they both are, but Eleanor wants to be there for her. There's just so much loaded in that one sentence.
Yeah, like, Marianne is aware that her own emotional turmoil is a burden onto her sister, that her sister, like, happily takes, but Eleanor does just can't bring herself to return the favor, or she, I don't know if she doesn't trust Marianne to be able to take it, or if she's just too scared to do it, but she spends so many chapters, you know, trying to make up for how unhappy Marianne is and trying to, you know, how do I want to put this? She keeps trying to make up for all the social graces that Marianne currently lacks because she's too busy with her own stuff. She, you know, she's there making conversation with Mrs. Jennings and she's being sociable and she's appearing at the dinners. And it's like, you don't have to be there. You don't have to be doing that, Eleanor. You don't have to be the person carrying all the weight in the world. You don't have to be the one trying to be so happy for everyone and making sure that you're, you know, appearing to be happy. You don't have to make everyone feel comfortable with Marianne's feelings, because Marianne does not care. Marianne is totally comfortable.
There's a really awkward exchange between the sisters where it seems like Marianne might know a little bit more than she leads on. They have that conversation earlier, and Eleanor says, you know, you have no confidence in me, Marianne. And she says, no, Eleanor, this reproach from you, you have no confidence in no one. Me, returned Eleanor in some confusion. Indeed, Marianne, I have nothing to tell. Our situations are alike. We have neither of us anything to tell. You because you communicate and I because I conceal nothing. And Marianne here, this is kind of like a spark of, I know that you're not telling me something and you're denying it and I think it's rude, and but I'm not going to say anything. It's this weird passive-aggressive sister moment that I really related to. But then later, Marianne says, you know, like, oh, like, you're so happy. And Eleanor's like, oh, if you only knew. And it's like, Eleanor, just tell her. Like, you both are sad. You both have been, you know, left by the man you love for someone else. Like, you have something to – I know that you want to focus on Marianne's feelings because there's so much more outward. But, you know, if you just talked and had your name is sister moment, right?
I really loved Marianne for that moment when she just called her out like that, because it is true. It's like Eleanor doesn't trust her. And it's so easy to, I mean, I imagine she's, Eleanor has been, you know, had to be the strong one all this time. And she's actually used to playing this secondary role in her own life, which relatable, that maybe she doesn't think her feelings are as important, especially because Marion is so explosive with her feelings and so exposed that it's hard for her to break out of that habit when they could really bond together. I thought it was such a good moment that this is their fight, this fight where, like, their one sisterly fight that we've come across so far, where it's Marianne being like, I can't be there for you. You always have to be there for me because I trust you with my feelings, but I don't know what's going on with you. I know you're not sharing with me. It's kind of a great tiny moment, but as with all things, Marianne is used to the Marianne show. So later on, of course, she does. And she's 17. Of course, she thinks that her sadness and woe is the worst tragedy of all time to be happening.
These chapters really draw our best comparison between Eleanor and Marianne. Like, this is very explicit in the direct comparison, because we have Eleanor and Edward, and we have Marianne and Willoughby, and both of their guys have been pretty insensitive to them. I mean, Willoughby is obviously very outward and very cruel, but Edward's also cruel. You know, however he professes that he's awkward or anything, he was very rude to not have told Eleanor about his engagement, secret however as it might be. And regardless, we have two men that have been very insensitive to women that love them. And Eleanor is relieved that she doesn't need to share the news with her mother and sister. She doesn't want to tell anybody. She just wants to keep it all bottled up inside, versus Marianne, who literally says, like, I don't care who knows that I'm wretched. Like, I don't care. So we literally, like, these are exact opposite reactions to very similar treatment, whether Willoughby's is maybe worse or not, is, you know, just a question of degrees, really. I think that they're just very two different reactions and really give us a sense of these sisters and their differences. And it's just sad because I feel bad for both of them. I don't think either of them is the better way to handle it.
Yeah. Although I do in some ways envy Marianne, because I'm definitely more of an Eleanor in this sort of regard. I'm very much in the, like, put my head down, get through what needs to be done, and I'll deal with that at some point later by myself when no one can look at me. But I wish I could just, like, feel comfortable with making everyone uncomfortable around me because I'm not happy. There's something really, especially in that time period, especially when women or girls who act out like that are painted or, you know, are portrayed as silly and hysterical and nonsense and all that stuff, to just be like, this is who I am. This is what I'm going through. I don't care about your rules. I don't care about how you feel, because right now this is what I'm feeling and I'm owning all of it. I would love that. I love that so much. I am so jealous of that. I'm horrified by it, but also jealous of it.
Yeah. It's hard because I don't think either of the ways that they're handling it are, I guess, maybe the healthiest ways. But at the same time, while we might kind of envy Marianne's expressive feeling and letting the emotions pour out, because she's so dramatic, everybody knows that her and Willoughby were together. And everybody thinks that they were engaged. And now everybody knows that he's with this other woman. And so, yeah, I don't really necessarily think that the way Eleanor handles her emotions and her distress is better than Marianne's. Marianne's has the direct consequence of everyone knowing about it. And as much as she doesn't care, she has to endure, you know, Mrs. Jennings being like, when are they going to be engaged? She has to endure her mother's, when are you guys going to be engaged? She even has to endure Eleanor tattletaling to their mother, like, oh my God, how can you let your daughter be engaged to such a mysterious dude? And it's just like, I really feel for both of them, and I want them to work stuff out. But Marianne really has, at least right now, the crappy end of the deal, having the whole world know. Yeah.
It's like two different kinds of wallowing in their pain, which is great. Wallowing sometimes very healthy and fine, a very, you know, a first step in processing everything. But it's a worry that neither of them will get past it if they stay in this stage.
I think it's definitely coming to a head. I mean, the book is about a little more than halfway over, but we still have a lot more here. So obviously there's a lot more that needs to happen still in our story. And I think we're sort of seeing the beginnings of the sisters at least about to confide in one another, at least a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I think it was last week you were talking about how you didn't understand why Eleanor just couldn't tell her sister what was going on, and maybe she was afraid that her sister would be just as public about her secret with it. But as much as Eleanor's our heroine, and as much as, like, I personally relate to how she deals with things, she has a sister that she loves so dearly and who clearly loves her back, and very often, you know, even in the midst of all her own personal stuff, will occasionally be like, oh my God, are you okay? I feel like she's not giving her enough credit just because she is the silly, romantic younger sister. And it would be nice to see the two of them turn to each other and share, not just like, you know, be like, well, you're a person who's here, you know, have that intimacy that they, that two sisters who get along, who care for each other can have.
You're right. I was sort of maybe being unfair a little bit last episode, not understanding why Eleanor wouldn't want to tell Marianne. And I think these chapters, you're right, really draws that out as to why it would be maybe a bad decision. Because it would bond her with Marianne, but right now Marianne's dealing with her own stuff. And Eleanor sort of has to deal with her internal mortification before she's able to confide and use Marianne as a support network. So I think you're right. It really does draw, or really does highlight why each of these women have their own sort of reactions to heartbreak and crappy men.
Especially when you had Sir John and Miss Jennings, you know, alluding that Eleanor has a beau herself and his name starts with an F, and they reveal it to someone who just happens to be engaged to a Mr. F. So that was probably mortifying enough as it was. But then, like, the fear of it getting out past that is probably even worse. But, I mean, come on, it's your sister. Trust your sister. Plus, I feel like Eleanor is using this as a huge distraction not to deal with all the Edward stuff herself.
Oh, yes. This is good. Thank you.
Yeah. She doesn't have to deal with it if she's too busy taking care of Marianne and dealing with her feelings. But wouldn't it be nice for Marianne if she didn't have to constantly be thinking about Willoughby? If you could, because I mean, sometimes you get stuck on that train of feelings. Sometimes you just need a break to kind of snap you out of it. And wouldn't it be nice if she could be like, oh my God, Edward, Lucy, them? Ugh.
That's true. Maybe it'll happen. Maybe in the next chapters they'll have a big girl sister sleepover and they'll decide who needs men. I think that'll happen.
I hope so. Who needs men when we have each other? And also Colonel Brandon's there too. Amazing.
So I know that you're feeling very negative toward Mrs. Jennings, and I agree, she's done some things. Mm-hmm. But when she finds out that Willoughby's done this, she has this quote where she says, "He has used a young lady of my acquaintance abominably ill, and I wish with all my soul his wife may plague his heart out." And I just laughed so hard at that line. I was like, you go, Mrs. Jennings. That is a curse.
That was a good one.
That was a curse.
A really good one. That was one of those moments where I started being like, all right, so maybe she's okay. What was that, chapter 30? At some point, Eleanor is like, okay, I have to be fair to Willoughby. there was no engagement. And Mrs. Jennings like, that doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. He was terrible. I was like, you go, girl. Suddenly in your corner again. I'm so back and forth on her.
I know, but Eleanor is such a stick in the mud, right? Because she like, at first she writes home to mom and says, you better set Marianne straight. Like, come on, Marianne. Or come on, Eleanor. You have to write your mom and like tattle on Marianne. And then later, she is reading these horrible letters that Willoughby sent to Marianne and Marianne's really sad letters to Willoughby. Eleanor can't help herself. And she says, her condemnation of him did nothing to blind her to the impropriety of them of their having been written at all. When she's talking about Marianne's letters. It's like, Eleanor, you're such a stick in the mud. Let Marianne send the love letters to Willoughby. And the letters are fine. I mean, they have a lot of emotion, but they're just like, what's going on?
Yeah, they're a little extra to the point where I started feeling that creep of like secondhand embarrassment, being like, wow, this is a lot. This is a lot. It's more than, clearly more than just friends or just platonic affection and excitement.
Oh, yeah. And then Eleanor keeps pushing her like, okay, so you were engaged, right? And Marianne's like, well, I mean, we were basically engaged. And I was just like, oh, Marianne, no, you always get it in writing. Listen to the lawyer. Always get your engagements in writing.
Yeah, Eleanor says, but he told you that he loved you. And Marianne says, yes. No, yeah. Never absolutely. It was every day implied, but never professedly declared. I was like, oh, Lord, no.
Well, that gets right back to like when we literally just started reading the book and Marianne was just, and Marianne and their mother, Mrs. Dashwood, they just went on and on about how Willoughby loved her and you could tell because of the looks, you can tell because of just everything. And Eleanor's like, no, has he said the words? If he doesn't say the words, then it's not there.
As you said, she wants it in writing. It's not official till it's in writing.
Get all your love letters in writing, people, and then save them, the carbon copy. Make copies of them. Save them on the cloud. Make sure nobody
Email
can get
them.
Email
them to yourself so it's dated. Yeah.
It's in the internet. Keep all your love letters in the internet.
Yeah. But that's like kind of the evil genius of Willoughby, where he was able to convey all of this, but still not even explicitly state it, let alone write it down. He has all this deniability. He's able to slip out of this little thing that he created for himself, but leaving the crap around him for everyone else to deal with. It's so rude leaving a mess like that.
Ugh, yeah, I hate him. He's the worst. Eleanor literally calls him the villain, and we're Eleanor, so yeah, we're allowed to call him the villain of the story.
Absolutely. I think I'm done with that. In my head, I'm trying to figure out what, if anything, is redeemable about Willoughby that we've read so far.
You know, I don't think we need to...
Everyone has to be redeemed.
The only thing I can think of, he needs money. He's clearly not great with money. He's going to give... Marianne a horse, and I think we're all glad that he didn't, because I would never be able to look at that horse again. But I guess he's just being, you could say he's being practical. He needed a marriage that could get him money, but I don't think that excuses just how rude he was to her. I don't think her heart would be maybe any less broken if he had sent a letter saying, you know, I really enjoyed our time spent together. Unfortunately, business has called me elsewhere. I met a woman, blah, blah, blah. So, but by just pretending it never happened, about being awkward and ignoring her, I think that really puts him in a little bit of an irredeemable category for me.
I absolutely have to agree, because, I mean, we've talked about this before with, you know, characters who are so focused on money or so focused on getting their daughters married. It's a survival thing. That's all they have, you know, going for them in this stage. If maybe you weren't so well off and you don't have, like, the connections or the education or some family legacy to rely on, yeah, you're trying to get by. That's super understandable. That's a kind of ambition that does not disqualify anyone from being a favorable character, at least even in Jane Austen's world. But he was so mean to her. That was so cruel to just like take this very sensitive, very open person and just break her heart and leave the pieces out for everyone to see and to deal with.
Yeah. And he had to know that everybody knew that everybody thought that they were engaged. He had to know that if everybody in town knows it, he knew exactly what it would be to bring this girl to this party, and he knew what it would look like, and he knew just how heartbroken she would be. and he's a jerk.
I did like this moment when Colonel Brandon came to talk to them and was offering his congratulations about the engagement and saying that, yeah, it's generally known. And Eleanor says, it cannot be generally known, returned Eleanor, for her own family do not know it. I thought that was such a fantastic line.
Well, even when Colonel Brandon comes earlier and he's like, so what's the goss about Marianne and Willoughby? Everybody says they're about to be engaged, and Eleanor really doesn't know what to say. And so she's like, well, I haven't heard they're engaged, but I know they like each other a lot. Like, please, Brandon, just like, she's like, give me a break. Don't make me say it.
Yeah, poor Brandon.
I hope we find out about this, like, love child. Like, that has to come, right?
We have to, because Miss Jennings is not going to lay off of that. She's not going to let anyone forget about that love child.
We know that her gossip here isn't always that accurate, right? Because he or she thinks that they're practically engaged to be married. And so I don't know if we can take everything that she says with, okay, like, she's the one that knows all the information, so...
Quite like her daughter, Mrs. Palmer, who said that she had the engagement between Eleanor, or between Marianne and Willoughby, confirmed by Colonel Brandon himself.
Yeah, like the circle of, like, gossip. How big is London anyway?
There was about 5 people.
Yeah.
And all of them are related to Mrs. Jennings.
And all of them go to the Middletons' parties.
I want to know how big these parties are.
It seems like there's lots of parties in this world, at least for, like, the upper middle class, good-looking white people of Regency-era England.
Yeah, everyone, I mean, no one else exists outside that description.
Yeah, right.
Sometimes I do wonder about all these people whose social life and, like, getting by and... the marriages that are going to happen, the families that are connected, the business that is done. A lot of it just seems to be showing up and being social and knowing how to dance and play cards and talking to other people, but correctly.
I mean, it doesn't change very much if I believe everything I see on TV, which I do, so Downton Abbey. But I did enjoy when you were talking about Peaky Blinders earlier. You were like, yeah, so it's like immigrants and stuff and like not really like the same as Jane Austen's books.
It's 100% different. All the people who have to do stuff for a living. It's so different and so just as intricate and complicated. But I just imagine those are not people who read Austen and think, well, that's relatable.
Yeah, I don't know if we're all supposed to think that. So let me think here. I do have an interesting fact. Would you like to hear my interesting fact?
I would love to hear your fact.
So chapter 29 is a little bit different than the rest of the book, right? Because we have the full text of these letters, and it's Eleanor reading these letters. And I think, as we'll see as we go on in Jane's or Miss Austen's oeuvre, that she uses letters a lot in her writing, and sometimes to great effect and to cause a lot of points. But I don't know if you knew this, Annie, but the original manuscript for the book was conceived as in a epistolary novel titled Eleanor and Marianne. And what that means is that it was just a book of letters. And eventually, it was 4 years later, after Austen wrote the original manuscript, that she rewrote the letters that to include narration.
Sorry, I was clicking.
Oh my God, that's awesome. I like just dumped a whole bunch of facts on you.
I was so blown away by your facts that I just was stunned into silence. No, that's really, it is really cool, because I genuinely would love to have read an entire version of this story in letters. There's something about getting to hear their actual words and getting a feel of the characters, because we don't get to hear like those big blocks of text, of quotes from them. Outside of those letters, and I think at some point Edward spends a lot of time talking about scenery at some point.
Yeah, look at the leaves.
So I did like those parts, even because honestly the letters is what really pushed the line for me with hating Edward so much, because to hear it put in his own words and how he painted everything and like, it's my fault for leading you, or not my fault for leading you on. I apologize if my manner just kind of gave you the wrong impression and you misunderstood me in this thing that didn't happen. And that just, there's something so much more intimate into getting to read a character's actual words, because I don't think we really get that much dialogue in general.
That's true. It is a lot of like internal monologue and observing people, and now like a chapter that's almost entirely letters. And now, if you will indulge me, I'd like to move on to my favorite segment, the best Austen burn. Do you have a nominee? Because I have 3. There weren't as many in these chapters because it was a lot of like sadness.
There really wasn't. Probably there was one that struck out to me a little bit when Marianne and Eleanor agreed to go into town with Mrs. Jennings not long after they had said no to the Palmers for a visit. And they're like, oh, you didn't want to hang out with us, but you wanted to hang out with my mom. Okay, sure. So it's not really burned as it is just kind of like a little dig and aside, I'm not happy with my husband thing of Mr. Palmer will be so happy to see you, said she. What do you think he said when he heard of your coming with Mama? I forget what it was now, but it was something so droll.
Yeah. And then see, I actually have a line that I liked around there when they're talking about Mr. Palmer, and it says he was careful to avoid the appearance of any attention to his mother-in-law.
Oh, yeah, I did have that one highlighted too. It's like, well, just more very subtle, sly one-liners about how happy those two are together.
And then I have another Mrs. Jennings line that I don't know if it's really a burn, but I loved it so much. In chapter 30, it says, she then went away, walking on tiptoe out of the room as if she supposed her young friend's affliction could be increased by noise. It's such a strong visual. I, like, see Mrs. Jennings, like, creeping out of the room and Marianne just, like, bereft
like
with
grief.
Like
one of those cartoons.
Yeah, exactly. Like the
tiptoe.
Okay, but I have my favorite line, my favorite burn, excuse me, my nominee for greatest Austin burn. It's also in chapter 30, and they're discussing Willoughby's engagement to this Miss Gray and why he could possibly have jilted Marianne for her. And it says, but have you likewise heard that Miss Gray has 50,000 pounds? In that, if in anything, we may find an explanation. Oh, why don't you just read Willoughby right there?
I was looking for this because I knew what line you were going to say. They said, 50,000 pounds, my dear. Did you ever see her? A smart, stylish girl, they say, but not handsome.
Ooh. That's like the worst thing you could say.
Yeah, you could almost imagine somewhere Willoughby being like, 50,000 pounds, handsome enough for me.
Oh, Willoughby. What a jerk.
Hold on. I'm trying to find... Hold on. I think... let me see if I can find that. I don't think I highlighted it, but I remember it existing. No, it was basically just like Marianne being convinced that some woman, you know, whatever woman took him away from her, had to have used magic, basically.
Oh,
to
yeah,
steal
yeah.
Him away.
I did enjoy that. So I guess there is magic in Jane Austen's universe, and here I am dismissing it as a possibility.
Oh, imagine the parallel Harry Potter world going on at the same time.
Annie, don't make me write this fanfic. Because I will.
Oh, good. Because that was basically my intention for me stating it.
You have Pride and Prejudice with zombies. Now meet Sense and Sensibility with magic.
With wizards.
Barton University or Barton School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Oh, God.
Was it Sense and Sensibility and wizards?
Someone's got to write it. It's not going to be me. Or maybe it will.
I'll keep checking up on you every so often. NaNoWriMo is starting soon.
Oh, yeah. It's in the month of November. I think they actually do have, like, Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters or something. We have to read this. I have to buy this and we can talk about it.
Sounds like a great Christmas gift.
Anyway, is there anything else you'd like to add to our discussion of these chapters of Sense and Sensibility?
You know what? I think we've covered it. We've discussed at length at how awful Willoughby is, and frankly, that was the main reason why I showed up.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad that my sparkling morning personality wasn't enough for you.
Oh, it always is.
Right, so next episode, we're going to be covering chapters 31 through 35. So let's see if Willoughby still sucks at the end of those chapters. My guess is that yes, he will still suck.
I'm guessing that we are going to hear more from Colonel Brandon.
Oh, that is a excellent guess. Now, before we talk about where you can find us, I just want to shout out our dear friend Annie and her new podcast, and that you should all listen to it. And Annie, you want to give a little blurb for what's coming?
Oh, thank you. Yes. So me and two friends, two mutual friends of ours, Matt and Melissa of the podcast Wild Pretty Things, have started a new podcast where we'll be rewatching. Well, Matt and I will be rewatching Mad Men and Melissa will be watching it for the first time. We're just going to be we really want to know if Mad Men which first aired about 12 years ago, still holds up in the year of 2019, post Me Too movement, post so many other things. So it'd be great if you joined us as we watch along. The podcast is called Still Great Bob. You can find us at stillgreatbob.podiant.co. I'll post the link in the show notes. Jess, where can people talk to us?
Well, Annie, we would love to hear from you, so please come visit us at thedailynightly.com. Check out our Goodreads page, which I have not updated in about 2 months. You can also find us at Twitter at NightlyPod, at Instagram at thedailynightly, where Annie has found the best Jane Austen memes. And you can also email us at thedailynightly@gmail.com. Remember, Nightly is spelled with a K.
Yes, and thank you to Ken McLeod, who does music at the top and bottom of the show. And we look forward to talking to you next time, guys.
Happy reading!
Happy reading!